Welcome to Hermaphobia number 8. I'm Alan.
And I'm Mark.
And we're here to talk some tech news and some entertainment.
And anything else that tickles our fancy.
We have no tickle jokes.
and we have some pretty fancies.
So how was your week, sir?
Unbearably long. Yeah. It took forever for this week to end. It was my first week back from my holidays, and it just seemed to drag on and on. And, it didn't help having a staff meeting thrown in there on top of all my other shifts that I worked, so,
Deceptively long week. I don't know. It was the regular 7 days, but goddamn, it felt like 14 or 15, or especially the hours working.
Yeah. Anything else exciting happened to you this week?
Just my shit fucking luck continues, and just let's not get into it. Hopefully, there's some light on the horizon here, and I won an eBay auction today, so hey, it was an actual auction. It wasn't a buy it now, yeah.
Which a lot of the auctions that I'm in, they're just selling.
Yeah. Which is cool. I mean, at least you know what it's going to cost, kind of thing, right? But I guess eBay is moving away from the auctions.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder who's going to pick it up.
I don't know if anybody is, because I think that might have run its course. The auction thing in general?
Yeah.
Because when eBay first started, there was a lot of them, like Amazon. Didn't they have auctions as well?
Well, doesn't Amazon still have auctions?
That's just it. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. They've got a lot of used stuff, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So let's go into the things we're going to talk about this week. The first is kind of near and dear to your heart.
It is.
There's been talk for years now about a remake of John Carpenter's The Thing, which was in turn a remake of Howard Hawks' The Thing.
Not just The Thing, but The Thing from Outer Space.
Yeah, whatever.
Or something.
So rather than a remake, it looks as though it's going to be a prequel.
I don't mind that as much as the remake option. I actually prefer it. Or even a sequel. I prefer the prequel.
Absolutely. I mean, as long as it's not going to step on the toes and try and reinvent that wheel, then it's nothing but a good thing.
Yeah, and it... the story is already there. Like, it had such an open beginning that, yeah, there's plenty of room to move in there.
Well, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, in the big story, Carpenter's kind of jumped in the middle anyhow, right?
Yeah.
They discovered the other base that had been completely annihilated by the alien. So there are stories to tell before Carpenter's came in. And if, you know, I just don't want to see somebody come in and take Kurt Russell's place, or Wilfred Brimley's, or everybody else that was involved in the movie and was so good.
Yeah, I don't think they would be able to do it justice.
And it's also part of, like, what Martini was talking about a couple weeks ago on the comments about, you know, these sort of way long overdue sequels and stuff like that. Like, this kind of goes into that kind of trend. Like, he was talking about Godfather 3 and Texasville, which he didn't particularly care for, as it seemed. The Two Jakes, Indiana Jones came out this summer.
Yeah, that was like a long time between 3 and 4.
And now they're talking about a Ghostbusters 3.
Hmm. I'm of mixed mind about that one. I really enjoy the Ghostbusters universe and the characters, but the second movie didn't really wow me that much.
No, the second one was kind of crap.
Yeah, the first one was like a wow, really. Even the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, like he was, like, that was just funny. I don't know. The second one seemed to be flogging a dead horse.
Well, this third one, it sounds as though what they're going to do is kind of pass off the... hand off the torch to a new generation of Ghostbusters. Which, I don't know. Like I said, the second one was not that great. I can't say where I'm really gunned about a third one. If they're making a third one, this is really overdue.
You were mentioning before that they're getting the whole cast back, except for Rick Moranis. Like, does that include Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah, apparently everybody's coming back in. Moranis is the only one that they haven't got confirmed. They were talking, like, apparently Bill Murray's, you know, he's always kind of like this anyhow, but for the time being, they got him back, they got everybody back for the video game, and they think that in this incarnation of Ghostbusters, as long as it's not going to be solely focused on them, that he's game to come back for a third.
Yeah, because he's been trying his hand at the drama aspect of acting.
And he's been doing well. He's been succeeding, so.
Yeah, like Lost in Translation was, like, very good. Yeah. I rather enjoyed it.
I have Broken Flowers, but I still haven't watched it.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
I did see him in something recently that was a comedy, but it was only, like, for, like, a minute or so.
Larger Than Life?
Was that?
That was the one where he inherited the elephant and had to travel across the country.
Oh, that one. That was years ago.
I know.
I mean, like, something recent. I'm sure it'll come to me.
Well, he's been doing all those films with what's-his-nut, the guy that works with the Olsons and... Or not the Olsons, the Wilsons. he did...
Wow, that's completely two different kind of people.
Well, he did The Life Aquatic with... Steve, whatever the fucking name was.
Right, yeah.
And he did. Wasn't he in Rushmore?
Yes, he was. He played the professor.
So, I mean, he's been turning the career around for a while, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
You know what? I couldn't have been less interested, in spite of the fact that Angelica Houston was in it, whom I love. Had no desire to see it whatsoever.
I went to the theater to go see that one, and. There were some funny parts in it.
Yeah.
I.
What was the one? The Royal Tenenbaums turned me off of that director so much that I was so not interested in anything else.
I was so looking forward to the Royal Tenenbaums.
So was I.
I heard such a good buzz about it.
Yeah.
And then I watched it, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah. Yeah, the Royal Tenenbaums, it really put me off of this guy. If that's his humor, it's not mine, so...
Yeah, and I'm usually one for, like, offbeat humor and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it just was kind of boring.
All right, let's move on to something else.
I was going through my news this week, and I found something that interested me about Blockbuster. This is from simpatico.msn news for small business. It says, a Blockbuster no more. Back in 2000... a tiny little startup company met with Blockbuster execs. It offered to sell a majority of the company for US $50 million investment. The Blockbuster execs looked at each other and said, "Nah, screw it. Your business model is flawed." Instead, the wise Blockbuster execs signed with Enron for an exclusive 20-year video on demand deal. And you all know what happened to Enron. That little rejected company was Netflix, and as of May 2008, it is worth US $1.9 billion. Blockbuster is currently valued at $345 million. Million, not billion.
Yeah, Blockbuster used to be the king back in the day, but that whole business model has gone the way of the dinosaur.
Yeah, but they thought, hey... We've got the brick and mortar stores. That's how people want to get their movies.
Yeah.
They want to come in. They want to browse the whole selection. They don't want to sit at home and do this.
No, well, but that model was so flawed. I mean, because I think people got to the point where they were so annoyed of walking into a store where what they wanted wasn't there. And then they started having those rental guarantees and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I used to work in the video store, and those guaranteed rentals, they're basically leased by the studios. So it becomes a profit-sharing endeavor, much like releasing a movie theatrically.
Mm-hmm.
So the company that you're leasing the tapes from take, 60% during the first couple of weeks, and then it goes down, and then you start making more money the older the movie is. Well, after the first 30 days, the movie's dead. So they weren't making any money on their rentals by having those guaranteed titles. Which is basically the same thing that's happening in the theaters, except the theaters have their concessions and stuff like that to kind of pad things up.
Yeah, with their like $8 bags of popcorn
or
$6 large pops.
So when this was introduced to Blockbuster, they should have been a little bit more active in looking to change their business model.
Yeah.
And I mean, anybody that, you know, when a consumer doesn't have to get in their car, drive to the store, wander around looking for an alternative title because they couldn't find the one they wanted in the first place. And it's a dissatisfying experience. Whereas with this, that you open up your mail, woohoo.
I've got a movie.
Yeah.
And like Netflix has never charged late fees because of their business model. You watch your movie, you send it back in whenever you want. To try to counter that with their business, Blockbuster decided to drop their late fees. Well, their late fees comprise 16% of their actual profit. And that's a huge pay cut for everybody there. They just can't compete in the same market anymore. Like right now, it's not quite no late fees for Blockbuster. They have a 7-day grace period where they can bring the movie back within 7 days and all is good. If they don't, the full price of the DVD is charged to their account. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, even, I mean, Netflix's success, I think, is really, they owe a lot to the DVD market. DVDs are so much less than what VHS tapes were and everything else that you can afford to, I mean, you could basically buy 3 to 4 DVDs for every VHS tape. But if we were still, you know, using that same price model that was back then, mm-hmm. Netflix wouldn't be able to do the business that they're doing.
Oh, no. Plus, there's so much more to go wrong with a videotape.
Oh, God, yeah.
Like, there's so many moving parts in there, like little sprockets and shit in the tape itself.
I was just listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about the first time they watched Wild Things and how when you put in the movies watching it, and all of a sudden there's this one part where the tape started going really wacky, and you could track till the second coming, and you weren't going to see Denise Richards and Nev Campbell going at it no matter what, because that sucker was worn down.
I remember when I was a kid, my mom worked in a video store and used to get videos all the time for me on the weekends to, like, for me to watch. And she brought home this one Benny Hill video. I don't know what happened. I was trying to push the pause button on my wired remote for my top loader VCR.
So you could freeze frame the titties?
Maybe.
Yeah.
what happened was I pushed the record button instead. And as you know, videotapes that come from video stores used to have a little tab pulled out. This one didn't.
Yeah. You started recording?
I accidentally recorded like about 30 seconds of whatever was on TV at the time over top of the only interesting part in that whole Benny Hill video.
You're like some sort of Puritan censor.
And of course, I said nothing. This is actually the first I've ever mentioned of this.
Oh, no.
Ever.
Hi, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when you got fired for that broken tape you brought back to work?
It's all good now because, well, that tape has long since been recycled. Yeah, Walmart. 37% of all U.S. DVD sales are going through Walmart, and sales dampen the rental market.
You think?
Yeah. Cable companies are pushing personal video recorders and time-shifting movies and shows also decreases rental demand. Video on demand's growing popularity. Why rent when you can pay your cable or satellite company to watch on demand? Like, you don't even have to leave the house. You don't even have to leave your couch.
Yeah.
Or your favorite chair.
Well, and, you know, and then they're talking about, you know, the big change coming on the horizon is digital downloads.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to shake up things with Netflix. But, I mean, Netflix seems to be somewhat proactive in adapting for this change that's going to come by having their stuff available through, I know it's available through the Xbox now and Popcorn, I believe
sure.
Is.
Are they doing Popcorn video?
I'm not sure. Aren't they doing, what's the popular U.S.
TiVo.
Are they on TiVo as well?
I'm not sure, but I know that they do have a digital,
like,
on-demand kind of download.
But the only thing that the big stopper that I see in the whole move towards digital downloads is you've got the ISPs right now capping everybody, you know, anywhere from 60 to 250 gigs. I mean, 250 gigs is a lot. I can even almost get away with that.
Yeah, maybe. But if you're downloading, like, a Blu-ray quality HD movie, you're looking at, anywhere from 6 to 14 gigs? like download.
Yeah.
And if your cable company or your ISP is capping you at, say, 20 gigs
yeah.
or 30 gigs, you've got maybe like two movies to watch a month.
Yeah.
And then you can't do fuck all. You can't even browse the net unless you want to pay like huge, like per megabyte charges.
Well, and even at that, I mean, like, you're talking about disposable video at that point as well, too, because of the DRM restricting everything. It's not like a DVD. You can't put it in different machines. You can't put it in your laptop and your living room player and your player in the bedroom and your desktop and everything else, because it's all wrapped in DRM. You can't share with your friends or even
like lend it to your friends. Like, because well, once you buy a DVD, you can lend it to your friend and you know that he's going to be able to play it.
Yeah. And you can't take it over to your friend's house to watch it with them there. Like, you know, you just, it really limits your options.
That actually leads me into something else that I was reading about a digital entertainment content ecosystem and what it's being touted as the DRM of the future. All of these, like, super big names are involved in this, like Warner Brothers, NBC Universal, Lionsgate, Fox, Paramount, Sony, Comcast, Microsoft, Philips, Toshiba, HP, Intel, VeriSign, Best Buy, Cisco Systems. Like, these are some big names in the entertainment business. Okay, now
Cisco Systems. I see two glaring exceptions there, though.
Well, yeah.
There's no Apple, and there is no Disney.
Yeah.
So, which means that you're going to end up with a division. I mean, like, that's great if they can get all these people on board, but it's not going to... It's still going to end up like when DVD started, there was DivX and DVD. When you know the new high defs started, there was HD DVD and there was Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
There can be only one. It's much like the Highlander. You know, you can't. Nobody's going to go out and have two different systems to support different studios.
This is the player I watch my Disney movies on.
Exactly. You know, it's insane. And, you know, unless they start working more cooperatively together, it's going to continue to be a great big old mess.
Like, get a standard. Like, finally, what?
Like
CDs. DVD? CDs or DVDs, finally became a standard. Like, remember when they first started out? Like, yeah, there was, like, four different ones. Like,
can you, I mean, seriously, could you imagine if you needed four televisions to watch each network? You had your CBS TV, you had your ABC TV, you had your NBC TV, and your Fox TV. It's ridiculous, you know. The way that they're rolling this stuff out, and the way that they're not working with one another, it's
counterproductive.
It is,
and pretty soon, like the market isn't going to support it.
Yeah,
forever.
And honestly, I mean, unless you get like fucking freaks like us and geeks that may be listening that actually know which studio a movie's coming out of.
Hmm.
How is the average consumer going to get, okay, I want to watch Mr. Brooks, so where do I have to go, which format do I have to buy in order to buy to see Mr. Brooks, which store should I be going to, which download service should I be going to, you know?
But the one thing that surprised me with all these people in there, actually two, Sony and Microsoft, because they usually DRM or...
Oh, they're very proprietary about their...
Yeah, very proprietary.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Toshiba is even in on this.
Yeah.
Like, and weren't they the HD part of the HD and Blu-ray war?
Yeah.
And Sony was the Blu-ray?
Yeah.
And here they are working together.
I don't know. I honestly can't see it taking off. I mean, even if they can get together and play well, how are they going to bring the ISPs into it? How are they going to get the ISPs on board to allocate that kind of bandwidth that's going to be required in order to move this much data?
Yeah, because the only way to get rid of the bandwidth caps because of the bandwidth crunch that's happening is to get fiber to the curb in every home.
Yeah.
And
that's just not going to happen for some people.
Work.
Yeah.
We lived in like South Korea.
Yeah.
Or,
well, Natalie Del Conte's talking about, you know, right now she's living in Manhattan, and I mean, they're tearing places up to lay down this fiber. Verizon, I believe, that's doing it with Fios. And they're fucking up all over the place.
I
so
know,
they
causing fires and shit like that.
So it's just, you know, it.
I don't want to have blazing hot speed from my internet provider, thank you.
You know, and I don't want technology to stand still by any stretch of the imagination, but at some level, at some point, you've got to say, you know what, this is good enough. Yes, we can do better, but just because you can do better doesn't mean that you have to do better.
Well, especially seeing as the U.S. government gave the telcos, like $200 million or $200
million? I think there was a B in there somewhere. But
like it was an insane amount of money to roll out all this stuff.
Which they never did. And that was what? Yeah. That was back in like 96, 97, something like that?
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. So, there are a lot of municipalities and stuff like that that are starting to do it themselves, that are starting to, they're treating the internet as a utility. Maybe that's the way it has to be done. Well, and cut the fucking ISPs out of the fucking game.
As the roads get repaved or the sidewalks get put down again, lay fiber. Yep. You know?
And start, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know what the solution is. My instinct then is then to say, okay, well then let the city or whoever take over the administration of the network at that point then. But do you really want it in government hands, even if it is small government?
Yeah.
By the same token, you can't trust the private sector because they're just fucking taking your money and stuffing it in your pocket. They're not putting anything back in.
Yeah. Well, it's a conundrum.
It is. It is. All right, it's time for the earworms of the week. Those little songs that get caught in your head and they just will not work their way out. what's been rattling in your head there this week, Mark?
I'm quite embarrassed to say, actually. I've mentioned this many times before. I work with old people out of a day program.
You put so much blame on them. There's so much passing of the buck.
Well, if it weren't for that, I wouldn't be listening to this kind of music.
Oh, the argument I could make to that.
I got in the work van, and we don't have FM radio. For some reason, it just stopped working. Kind of like a lot of us at work. We just stopped working. We only get AM radio in the van, so it's set to one of the couple AM radio stations that play music. And it plays old music. So I get in the van probably like Monday or Tuesday and turn on the van, and first thing that's playing is Love is a Man's Splendor.
It's the April rose that only grows in the early spring. Love is nature's way of giving a reason to be living. The golden crown that makes a man a king.
I stopped listening to it within seconds. And do you think that got out of my head all week? No. I'm finding myself whistling it. It's like, God damn it.
I think I'd cut my head off if I had that stuck in my head.
But I'm hoping to get it out this week. How about yourself? What's been rattling in your head?
Oh, dude, you know what it is. I woke up this morning with the full verse and chorus of a song stuck in my head that I haven't heard in... I wouldn't even venture to guess how long, but I mean, we're talking, there's a good decade in there. Mm-hmm. It's New Romance by Hollywood and Toronto.
Yeah.
if you grew up in the 80s, you knew who Toronto was, not where it was. they were a big Canadian group back in the day. They had, you know, Your Daddy Don't Know, Girls Night Out, Looking for Trouble. They had a whole bunch of singles that were really huge up here. They didn't break into the U.S. I mean, they were very much a benefactor of the CRTC in Canada.
CanCon.
Yeah. And
Canadian content.
But they were great. I mean, they were just, you know, a really good kind of rock band. Like, you know, they
pop
weren't
rock. Yeah.
They weren't even all that poppy. I mean, they were pretty much, you know, guitar orientated rock. With this chick named Holly Woods, who was the lead vocalist, and she was tough as fucking nails, and her and Darby Mills kind of at the same time. They were both from the Headpins. They were both pretty tough. And yeah, so that's the song that's been in my head. Probably one that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of, and if they have, they probably haven't heard it in a long time either. I gave the challenge to Mark to find it for me this morning, because I didn't have it. I haven't had it since I had the cassette back in the day. and Mark rose to the challenge. Mark has a special skill. If there's something you're looking for digitally, online, Mark can find it.
Usually. Within an hour, I can have a copy of it somewhere.
Yeah. Almost rose to the legendary challenge today, but you just missed it by that much.
Legendary with a small L.
Yes.
That was for the second song.
Yeah. But no, it was a valiant effort, and it was a huge thanks for finding this one, because it was going to make me crazy.
Yeah, well, actually, I think I might get a capital L for the legendary status, because I actually did find a place to purchase your second song.
Yes.
The whole album
on vinyl.
On a mint vinyl.
Yeah. For less than $10.
Yeah. Actually, the shipping cost almost twice as more, or twice as much as the actual album.
That's right. I don't go for them big popular bands that go that go crazy in worth later down the line. So news broke this week that the iPhone is pretty much keeping track of everything you're doing via screenshots that it is storing inside of its internal memory.
I know, that is creepy.
It is. They discovered that this is going on, and apparently Apple has addressed it, and they're talking about some sort of refresh system that won't be as reliant on it. Apparently what it does is it takes a screen image so that when it's doing its transitions, it can fade that picture out and move into the next picture.
So that it makes it look all pretty.
Exactly. But it's retaining the pictures. It's not it's not overwriting the same file all the time or anything.
And yeah, you can get in trouble for that.
Well, this is the thing. They were talking to a security expert who was saying that, you know, this is a definite security problem and it needs to be fixed. However, they don't really want to get it fixed because they already have busted some people using it. You know, the authorities have been aware of this little flaw and have been exploiting it for a while now. So it should be interesting to see what comes out of it, you know, whether or not Apple will fix it.
Well, look at it this way. It's kind of like Internet Explorer's cache. You have the option of deleting that cache file anytime you want.
Yeah.
And that way people can't just go into your cache files and say, hey, you've been searching for chicks with dicks?
Well, the difference is that you know that that cache file is there and that you can go in and delete it.
People don't.
Well, I think if the information's out there. This was completely unbeknownst to all users, so...
So if they were to add like a little widget somewhere on the iPhone to say clear cache,
yeah,
I'd be happy with that. Well, actually, I don't really give two shits.
Yeah,
I'm never gonna get an iPhone.
Yeah, well, pedophilic iPhone users, beware.
Yeah. Or just people who like to exist on the fringe of society. I want to break free.
Break free. It looks as though the Canadian equivalent of the DMCA is going to get shot down this week. Or, well, nothing for sure. The Made in Canada copyright legislation is amongst the bills that will die if Prime Minister Stephen Harper goes ahead with the widely expected election call at the end of this week.
And that's which already happened.
Happened, yes. It's a prospect that bitterly disappoints many artists.
I don't know about that.
Well, I think it probably disappoints more labels than it does artists.
Yeah.
There's critics that say that, you know, it could make criminals out of Canadians who want to make backup copies of music, movies, or software discs. And some liberals have promised to scrap the bill and start over when they form the next government. Excuse me. Canadian industry sources say the absence of modern copyright legislation is preventing Canadian firms from developing new business opportunities because Canada is seen by cultural producers from other countries as having weak protection for digitalized cultural content. So basically what this means is that if we copy something right now, we're not really breaking the law.
Well, no, and we already have that that little levy on all blank media that we buy just in order to pay.
It's on everything. It's on hard drives, it's on CDs, it's on DVDs.
It's on blank cassettes, yeah. Blank floppies even still. Yeah.
Which, you know, which comes back to how can you, on one hand, criminalize the activity and on the other, profit from it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I think if we end up with a DMCA like the U.S. has, God help us all. Like, where do you move to next? It's not about, you know, pirating stuff or anything like that. It's more about owning what you buy.
Yeah, because, like, I have made backup copies of some of my movies, like the ones that I watch more often, because I don't want to, like, destroy my, like, $50 or $60, like, hard-to-find disc.
Yeah.
You know? Or even, like CDs. Like, I'll rip my music and make it an MP3 so I can put it on my player, because I don't want the whole friggin' album in my car. Yeah. I want just, like, select songs off of it. Yeah. But that could become illegal.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, did we talk about this on the show before, about, you know, wanting to own what it is that you actually buy, that as things stand right now, the studios and everybody really wants you to for all intents and purposes, lease their property. You know, you have it, you got possession of it and everything else, but at the end of the day, they still own it.
That's you can't even throw it out, actually, if you want to follow their logic to its natural conclusion without written permission from them.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry.
No, it's ridiculous. And I mean, for somebody who is a big consumer of those kinds of products, then it's bullshit. Why would I be spending as much money as I spend on the stuff to collect it when in actuality I'm not really collecting it, I'm just fucking librarying it for them.
Yeah, for me, like, I've bought hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of DVDs from Walmart, like, last month, as you remember, or the month before. And I thought that kind of after a certain time, all sales were final. But I guess it's not really the case.
Well, and that's just it, too. I mean, you know, they'll delete something from their catalog or, you know, whatever. They'll discard their own products. But it's still held under all of this draconian wrapping of copyright and law and stuff like that. And I do not begrudge the artists, the producers, anybody that is behind the making of this stuff and are the creative talents that are making it happen.
Oh, no. I would sooner pay the artists than the labels.
Well, absolutely. And when you start seeing people like Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails and even Madonna moving outside of that system, you know that it's a broken system.
It's like, since when was the law created to help the entertainment industry? And well, it's really the entertainment industry.
Well, but the entertainment industry is a corporation. You know, it's many corporations. You don't see this, you know, you don't see this sort of accommodation by the government for sausage makers or, you know what I mean? Like, you don't.
Well, it's kind of hard to copy a sausage. And,
is it? There's a certain formula. You know, you mix so much pork with so much beef, and you add these spices, and hey, that's your stock and trade. So, you know, if...
Sausage.
So if somebody else comes in, basically cracks your formula, is making the same thing, calling it the same thing, you know, why is the government not there, you know, passing sausage legislation?
Yeah, like Fruit Loops, pretty much the same thing as Fruity-O's.
Yeah.
The bargain brand version of it.
Which is hilarious because here in Canada... the no-name stores, the economy stores, are owned by the government. Superstore, President's Choice is basically a government label. They're the ones that are knocking off the name brand stuff.
Well, and in some cases, it's even coming out of the same factory,
yeah,
off the same lines as the regular stuff.
Off the same floors, anyhow.
Now with less rat hair. Yeah.
In the comments this week, Martini mentioned the film Nightbreed, which kind of reminded me that I haven't watched it for quite some time.
Yeah, that was strange watching it again. Like, I wasn't sure if it was because I had read the book or if I was remembering the movie from the last time I watched it. If I'd watched it, I don't know, because it looked really familiar.
It was I remember when it came out, like, I was dying to see it. I love David Cronenberg. This was sort of the first big thing that he was acting in, like, just on board as an actor rather than director.
Yeah.
So I was really excited about seeing it. It was a great book. I know that I read the book before I saw the film, because you have to wait when you hear about something between it and its release date. It was a great book. I mean, it was an amazing book. I remember reading passages of it and thinking, like, it was so lyrical, the way it was written. There was passages of it that were just fucking beautiful. And you would stop and realize what it was that you just read. And your balls would ache because you realized somebody had just been fucking, you know, dismembered or disemboweled or something like that. Like, it was so well written.
Yeah, and, well, I like Clive Barker as a writer anyways. Like...
See, I've tried reading his stuff before and I could not get into it. But Cabell, I really got into. Then, after reading it, I waited for it to come to the theater, and it never came to the theater, at least not where I was. 20th Century Fox, I believe, was the distributor of the film upon release, and they dropped the ball. Like, they didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, and to its credit, I mean, it was a film that was, it had elements of stuff that were conventional, but the way it was presented was fairly unconventional. The monsters were the heroes, and, you know, it was the authority figures, the police, priests, and psychologists that were the bad guys.
Yeah. Hard to market.
Yeah. You know, especially, I mean, you think, when exactly did it come out?
It was...
1990.
It was released in 90, February
90. Yeah. And I mean, after that, I mean, you saw a lot of stuff where, you know, they played with conventions, but up to that point, Nightbreed was fairly original in that way. Mm-hmm. It was a shame. It finally showed up on video, and that was the way I finally saw it. You know, standard 4x3 VHS copy, blah blah blah. And then when it finally came out on DVD, day and date, I'm standing there at Future Shop going, "Where is it?
Unpack that box, you father, yeah. Father."
Yeah,
that was my motherfucker. Just really quickly, father.
So yeah, I mean, it's a great film. I haven't watched it for a couple of years. I'm glad Martini brought it up in the comments, because it all week it's been like, I need to watch that again. I need to watch that again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I got right down to last night. It's like, hey, we should watch that.
Yeah, at like 1 o'clock in the morning. So maybe this is a good segue into our DVD movie picks of the week.
Alrighty, I will let you go first because I know you have a really good one. Well, good for us.
Yeah, it's a movie I love. It's Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson in The Long Kiss Goodnight. It's a Rennie Harlan film. I love Rennie Harlan films. He is highly regarded as one of the biggest hacks working today, but I love his movies. I don't know what it is about them. And I'm talking about, like, all of his movies, like Driven. I loved fucking Driven. I saw Driven in the theater, and it was fucking awesome.
I still have yet to see Driven.
I
saw it kind of in passing when I was on a flight somewhere. I didn't bother to buy headphones. It was being played on the inboard entertainment.
It's like all of Harlan's stuff. It's big and overblown and dumb, but thoroughly entertaining. And The Long Kiss Goodnight, I mean, it was written by Shane Black. This is the guy who wrote, you know, the Lethal Weapon movies, The Last Boy Scout. He's generally considered to be one of, you know, the better action writers. He wrote and directed recently Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
I love that movie.
You know, I've
got to get that back. That's actually out of my collection right now.
But he's generally considered to be one of the best action writers that's currently working. And it is. It's a great script. It's, you know, about this woman who wakes up one day, doesn't realize who she is or anything else, and she starts a new life. And when her old life comes, you know, tearing down the door, she rises to the occasion. It's a great movie. Any movie where you've got women kicking ass, I love it. You know, whether it's Charlie's Angels or Bad Girls or what, I love watching women kick ass. And Gina Davis is tough as nails in this movie, and it's just fantastic.
Actually, this, I went to go see this in the theater, and I found it kind of funny because it was Gina Davis's second movie in a row with Rennie Harlan.
Yeah, well, she was married to him at the time.
Oh, well, that would make sense because she was also in Cutthroat Island.
Yeah.
And I know that Cutthroat Island was like panned by the critics, but
I loved it.
I enjoyed the hell out of it. It was a fun little romp. But yeah, that Long Kiss Goodnight, it had some, like some of the actors that I really liked at the time. Like, I still do like them.
Yeah. Craig Burko's in there.
Yeah, and this is it. I didn't even realize he was in there until I was looking at the IMDb, and he's in the credits.
Yeah. What's
Samuel
his name?
Samuel L. Jackson. There's Brian Cox in there, too. Oh, David Morse.
David Morse. Brian Cox is fucking hilarious. And the fucking dog bit, I submit to you that they're... the dog's licking himself. There's some great lines. It's just a great, great action flick. Mm-hmm. And what have you got on the table this week?
Well, I also went with a tried-and-true director, Ridley Scott's Gladiator. 2000. It's already been 8 years.
Yeah, you're getting old.
Yeah. Like, that stunned me when I saw that it was made in 2000. It's like, that means, like, so much has gone on.
Yeah.
Since then. It's like, I didn't realize it was that long. But, yeah, it's like a fantastic cast, fantastic direction. The sets were awesome. It's got a couple of my, like, favorite actors in it. Like, I like Russell Crowe beating up people. Like, that's like half of his career right there.
And any hotel lobby he goes to.
Yeah. Plus, Jimon Hounsou.
Whom I enjoy very much. For Strictly.
And that's just it. I like him, too, for, strangely, some of the same reasons that Alan does.
He's just a pretty man.
I like his accent. I like his acting, his style. Such a great actor. He doesn't do a lot of work. But I seem to catch almost everything he's in. What was that movie that he was in a couple of years ago? In America.
Oh, that's an amazing movie.
I cried like a baby in that.
That's a Jim Sheridan film. All of his stuff is really good.
Oh yeah. But then it was back to Gladiator. I brought my dad to see this when he came out to visit me one time. And his only two complaints about it was that the fighting was too close in, because it was all like all the fighting was like right in your face, graphic violence. He didn't like that. He prefers his battles from a distance and not as graphic. And he said it was too loud. Well, I did bring him to the best theater that we had in town at the time, with the best sound system in that cinema. So, I sorry, Dad. I'm going to have to overrule you on that. The sound was just perfect. Yeah, it won like five Academy Awards and was nominated for like a bunch of others too, right? So, what are your thoughts on it?
On Gladiator? It's a good movie. I honestly think it's one of Ridley Scott's lesser efforts. Yeah, I love Blade Runner, White Squall, Thelma and Louise. I really thought Gladiator, I mean, it was a departure for him, and it was, you know, it was kind of cool that he kind of went back to the whole sword and sandal thing.
Yeah, and it, well,
but
it was an epic.
But, yeah, where, it was like, yeah, kind of a snooze fest.
It wasn't quite the same, yeah, it wasn't his genre.
Yeah.
Choice.
Well, really. But I mean, he bounces around from genre to genre. Mm-hmm. I just didn't find it that engaging. I mean, like, honestly, if I were given a choice between Caligula or Gladiator to watch, I'd watch Caligula. It's not that I think that Gladiator's a bad movie. I've got my own copy of it as well. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, when I think of Ridley Scott's body of work, mm-hmm. it's very easy to come up with much, much better.
Well, two of my favorite movies are Ridley Scott movies, Alien and Blade Runner. Mm. Those top my two favorite, like, in of all time, yeah. My two favorite movies. Those are the top two. But this one here, I thoroughly enjoyed from start to finish.
I guess I didn't really understand why it got, you know, the accolades that it did, the Academy Award nominations and stuff like that. I mean, okay. Come on, seriously. Dramatically, Thelma and Louise versus Gladiator. Oof, Thelma and Louise, man. Like, you know, it had the story. It was much more engaging. I think that it has more to say about the world that we live in, kind of thing. And not to discount that, you know, that movie shouldn't be historic or anything like that. But as far as being relatable, I really enjoyed Thelma and Louise, and I love the uncompromising ending and stuff like that. Gladiator's a crowd pleaser. I've never really been too gung-ho about crowd pleasers.
Well, everybody excuse me for a second while I hit Alan with this little planter we've got here.
Like I said, I don't dislike the movie. I just, when it comes to Ridley Scott's body of work, I think that he's just done so much better.
See, I just liked it for its scope. Like, it was such a huge epic, and he held it all together, because those things, they can go wrong really bad. And I just...
But he's worked with that kind of canvas before. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at even in Alien, I mean, which is one of his earlier films. Look at the space jockey, that whole set where the space jockey was. You know, if you look at the making of stuff...
I want to know that backstory.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you look at the making of that stuff, I mean, it was only built so high and the rest was all put in afterwards. I mean, Ridley Scott has got an eye. He knows how to compose, you know, a shot. Take any scene out of Blade Runner and it's fully realized. Mm-hmm. So, for him to go in and do a typical, you know, sword and sandal epic, yeah, I had no doubt that would be something that he could do visually. And visually, the movie's interesting, but I think it's only visually interesting.
Well, I'm going to have to disagree with you there, but that's
but I'm not, discussions. But yeah, I'm not saying it's a bad movie. So, I mean, if you disagree with me, then you're saying it's a bad movie.
No. You say it's an all right movie.
Yeah.
I say it's a great movie.
Yeah. And contextually... When you're talking about Ridley Scott, I would say it's a marginal movie. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you're going to put it up against Uwe Boll, then it's a fucking masterpiece, you know? But I think it within Ridley Scott's body of work that it's one of his lesser films. Okay,
I will agree with you that, yes, it doesn't quite stack up to Alien or Blade Runner, but...
Thelma and Louise.
I've only seen Thelma and Louise maybe like two or three times. I have to give them another shot.
It's a great movie, and again, Gina Davis.
This is true.
And my favorite, and yeah. Oh, I love Susan Sarandon so much. I want her to be my mom.
You hear that, Sharon? Better watch out, man. She's going to attack you. I know your mom. She'll pull a knife or smash a bottle and attack you with it, man. She's mean.
I know she will. That's why I want Susan Sarandon. She's a pacifist. Love you, Mom. So that's the show this week.
Yeah. It was just a little bit too busy this week to try to really get really in-depth in any of the news stories coming out. Hopefully things will be a little bit lighter next week.
Work-wise, not show-wise.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, keep commenting in the posts. We might start even putting some, you know, just small written posts in every now and then. And and feel free to email us at any time at hermaphobia@gmail.com and include MP3s if you'd like to have your voice heard on here, and give us, you know, whatever things that you might want to hear us talk about, things, ideas that you might have for us, criticisms, you know, whatever.
And yeah, and keep the comments coming.
Yeah,
it's great. Even the always exciting to read Blonde Geisha X. I do understand English might be a second language, but it's awesome.
Yeah,
it makes me think. Was there
something with Jean Reno in the hospital or something?
He'd had a heart attack a little while ago. Or except later his publicist said that it was indigestion or heartburn or something.
Okay. Yeah. Well, get well, Jean Reno, and to those in the Gulf Coast there, I hope you're faring well through the bad weather.
Yes, and hopefully you're high and dry.
Yes. So until next week, take care.
And I didn't get an iPhone when I was a kid.
But you got molested.
Only that once, and I asked for it.
Mom told me not to play with Uncle Bill.
But I wanted the candy. But
did I listen? No. Oh, we're going to hell.